Every Friday on the farm is rabbit pie day. So every Friday that ever comes along, I get up early and sing this little song. Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run, run, run. Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run.
In what turned out to be a surprisingly heated discussion, Simon Howell, that's me, Ricky D., Patrick Murphy, and special guest Molly Faust of the Slicing Up Eyeballs podcast talk Get Out, as well as racial politics, horror and comedy style, and many more topics in, as I said, what turned out to be a very contentious discussion.
We bring you this special radio television broadcast in order to give you the very latest information on an amazing phenomenon. Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen, I think something is happening.
Good evening. I hope you'll excuse me if I appear a trifle excited.
We're only interested in one thing. Can you tell a story, Bob? Can you make us laugh? Can you make us cry? Can you make us want to break out? Enjoy your song.
We move fast. Can you take it?
No matter what you do now, you're still part of everything that's happening.
Used to be in silent pictures. Used to be big.
I am big. It's the pictures that got small.
We need more heart in motion pictures.
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Listen to me, Hatcher. You gotta tell him.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word. Are you listening?
The Boulevard of Broadway.
We're making another movie. This is the one I'll be remembered for.
Hello, you're listening to Sordid Cinema, which you can hear at sordidcinema.com and, of course, on our iTunes feed. I am Simon Howell. I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Ricky D.
What's up, Simon? We're also on Google Play. Yeah, I think I'm going to put our show on YouTube. I'm not sure yet. And some of our listeners have asked if they can listen to some of our older shows. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to, week by week, I guess, upload some of our older shows. So this week, for example, I'm going to upload our review of the original John Wick movie from about a year or two ago. So you'll be able to find all the information over at our website, sordidcinema.com. And also, I created a Facebook group for the podcast. So if you're a listener or a guest or a returning guest or a host, you can join our group. And it's just a great way to keep in touch, talk about movies. And if we ever need a last minute host, you know, we can use, I guess, the Facebook group to sort of see who's interested in hosting.
Fantastic. We are also, of course, joined by Mr. Patrick Murphy.
Hey, how's it going? I'm hoping this isn't going to be strike three for me as far as movies that I don't like, but we'll get to that.
And we're also joined by the fantastic Molly Faust.
Hi, thank you for having me back on. I have been on this show before in one of the shows that hopefully will get re-uploaded. It was the Jupiter Ascending episode, and we also talked about Speed Racer.
And I guess we should plug it now, the fact that you are also the co-host of the fantastic Slicing Up Eyeballs podcast.
Yes, absolutely. It's the greatest podcast of all time. It's better than this.
Ooh, the gauntlet has been thrown.
They're equals. We're peers. Yeah. I imagine that at some point in the future, we will do a big joint episode. That would be fantastic as far as I'm concerned.
That would be a really good time. So, do we have anything else, any more house cleaning to do before we get to this week's movie? Fantastic. All right, well, without any more ado, let's hear a clip from the film we're going to be principally talking about this week. That's Jordan Peele's Get Out.
I didn't want to tell you.
What?
I got hypnotized last night.
Nigga, get the fuck out of here!
Yo, to quit smoking, but it's Rose's mom's a psychiatrist, so...
Bruh, I don't care if the bitch is Ayanna Van Zant, okay? She can't fix my motherfucking life. You ain't getting in my head. I know she
called me off guard, right? But it's cool because I'm cured. It worked.
Bro, how you not scared of this, man? Look, they could have made you do all types of stupid shit. They'd have you fucking barking like a dog.
Flying around like you a fucking pigeon.
Looking ridiculous, okay? Or, I don't know if you know this, white people love making people sex slaves and shit.
You're back on Sordid Cinema. That was a clip from Get Out, the first film directed by Jordan Peele, perhaps still best known for the sketch comedy series Key and Peele. He also wrote the film, and it stars Daniel Kaluuya as a notably black photographer and his notably white girlfriend as they travel back to her neck of the woods to visit the family, and all is not as it seems. And perhaps that's that's all we can really say about it right now. So I believe our intention is to lay out perhaps some spoiler-free thoughts, and then before very long at all, I think we're going to have to get into spoilers to maybe talk about some of the meatier subject matter on display here. So I always start with Ricky, so I'm not going to do that. I know that Patrick, you've had less than checkered. Is checkered good or bad? I can never remember. Checkered is mixed. You've had less than spectacular luck with films on this podcast because for some reason you weren't in love with John Wick 2, which I think makes you subhuman, but whatever. Surely you had a better experience with the most critically acclaimed film of all time, Get Out by Jordan Peele.
Well, I you'll be happy to know now, Simon, that due to us seeing these three movies in a row, after seeing Get Out, I am now in love with John Wick 2. I believe that's the best movie that I've seen for this podcast. This wasn't a terrible movie. Get Out's not terrible. I didn't walk away like, this is awful and a waste of my time. Although it was probably a waste of about half an hour of my time, much like with A Cure for Wellness. I just thought it was really tedious, really boring for the most part. And there were so many inconsistencies. For behavior-wise in this film, that it just bugged the hell out of me. That and a very, very, very sparsely written main character that had zero personality. Like, gave me absolutely nothing to root for in this movie.
He's an audience insert. It's radical because he's different than the normal one.
Man, we must all be really boring then.
Wow, this did not start the way I was expecting. This is great. All right, so we've got one for the at least semi-negative column already. How about you, Ricky? Where'd you land on this?
Yeah, I think this movie is fucking fantastic. I think it's one of the best films I've seen this year. Maybe actually the best film I've seen this year. I think it's one of the best horror films I've seen in quite some time. I'm a huge fan of horror films. Absolutely love this film. It really got under my skin. I am still creeped out after watching this film. Just the opening scene alone, I mean, that's a masterclass of how to stage horror. I love the opening sequence. It reminds me a lot of John Carpenter films like Halloween. It's like taking a class in like John Carpenter direction. Like, I mean, I just love the way he used the widescreen compositions. I love the way he built suspense in that, like, what was it, like 2 to 3 minute opening sequence. I love the use of music playing that old tune Run Rabbit Run and then having the score kick in, which had the like wicked violin cues. This movie is fantastic. I have no idea what you're talking about, Patrick. This is gonna be an interesting podcast. I honestly think this movie is one of the creepiest films that I've ever seen in my life. We can nitpick at, I guess, the screenplay. I actually saw this film with Edgar Chaput, our good friend and former co-host of the Sort of Cinema podcast. And I wish he was on the podcast today because he could tell you how freaked out I was after watching this film and how excited I was about talking about it. Like, I just love, love, love this movie.
Molly, I gather you were neither freaked out nor excited.
I gave it 3 stars. but see, when I give something with this level of acclaim, 3 stars, I feel like I always have to like, play, I don't, not devil's advocate, because I'm actually the angel, the camera angel, but but like the same thing happened with Moonlight, where it's just like, this film is just so beloved, and I'm just sitting here and I'm like, I have to, you know, like, play up the negative about it, and that's, I feel, certainly the case here. It was fine. It has a few good things I like about it, but I think it has a lot of the problems that a debut does. I think it's thin. I think it's edited strangely. I think this is more like a case of like interesting elements, more like elements that you don't often even see. That I don't think are even made interesting.
There's a lot going on here already. I'm somewhere in between Molly and Ricky here. I think that it's a this is a pretty good movie. I think I left feeling like there were definitely some things I could nitpick and definitely some elements that were inconsistent. But I mean, maybe we should start with the characterization because this is something I actually totally disagree with seemingly two of you on. I think, first of all, I mean, maybe it's because I'm familiar with Daniel Kaluuya from a couple other projects, but I find him to be a really charismatic presence. And I think something that he plays beautifully, I don't think he underplays it. I think he just plays it beautifully. His sort of weariness and his awareness of, I guess the au courant term for this would be microaggressions. When he lands in this very white space and the Allison Williams character is saying, "Oh, these people aren't racist," and he's just deferent to these people in terms of noticing the way that they talk about him and the way they engage with him, and he knows the score, or he thinks he knows the score, and he just knows not to ruffle feathers, and he knows, or again, he thinks he knows how to navigate this space without creating trouble. And like he brings it there in how he deals with them on a physical level. And I think that to you, Patrick, this scanned as the character being boring, but to me, it scanned as a character who's very aware of his status in this place.
I think they definitely try to make it come across that way. Yes, he's, you know, aware of his place. The guy's a stick in the mud, though. I mean, regardless of what you think his intentions are, he has absolutely nothing to say in this movie. Zero. He has zero personality. He doesn't respond to anybody with any personality. I'm amazed that he ever got in a relationship with anybody, frankly, because he shows zero spark or chemistry with any person other than his buddy. And mainly that's due to his buddy's chemistry. Well, I forget what that guy's name, the TSA agent, though he was excellent. That's the only life that was in that brought out any life in him, the brief conversations they would have. Otherwise, he lacked any spark.
I think you guys are missing a point of his character in the movie. Like, I'm sorry. First of all, he had the right mix of likability and normalcy. And I think what Jordan Peele wants his character to be is he wants us to relate to his character. He wants us to like his character. He was a nice guy. He seems intelligent. He's talented. He's a successful photographer. And I think, like, what he does is he puts this character in a situation where he is the fish out of water. He's surrounded by these rich, wealthy white people who he's never met before in his life. So what exactly do you want him to do in that situation in terms of relating to people? Like, he has to be the polite
those are
boyfriend.
All hallmarks of
sorry,
a
I'm not finished talking. He wants to be the polite boyfriend, you know, to make a good impression on his girlfriend's family, because clearly it's he loves his girlfriend, like, even though they haven't been together very long. So in the situation, for what his character does, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think if you take him out of that context and you put him, say, in his own neighborhood surrounded by his family and friends, he's going to have a totally different personality. But I think the actor is fantastic. Yes, you're right, Simon. He's been in some amazing British TV shows like The Fades, one of the greatest TV shows of all time, even though it only lasted one season. He was in one of the best episodes of Black Mirror. I think he's fantastic.
Molly, I'd like to hear more from you since you agreed with me.
Those are all hallmarks of a cipher, though. Like, he's, you know, even a fish out of water. He's a nice guy. He's a mix of likable and, was it relatable? And it's like, and even, you know, photography, just to give him, like, the, you know, that one little trait, like that artistic trait, like that's like, that doesn't mean anything. Photography hardly signifies anything in this movie, which I think is shocking. Because, you know, we're dealing in a very similar medium. I don't understand the symbol of photography, like turning I guess that would be a spoiler territory. But it has, you know, a big piece of plot significance, and I don't really understand it except for maybe, you know, like a vague muckraking thing.
But does it really have anything to do with the major plot of the film? All it does is it explains why one specific character has a greater interest in him as opposed to the rest of the people that he's surrounded by.
It should have some sort of symbolic interest. I mean, like, you just, you know, just put random things into your movie with no intent behind them besides
I'm sorry, I think we're just going to go straight into spoilers here. These people don't even see themselves as being racist. Like, they actually admit, openly admit, that they admire black people. They admire them because they feel they are superior. They feel like, for example, that they're just, like, better human beings. Like, they're stronger, they're faster. That's what makes this movie so creepy. And these people who we get to meet and how they view black people and technically want to be black people, even though they're, like, disgusting and racist. And I think, like, what they're doing here is they're showing why these people have a great interest in specifically black people instead of, like, Asian people or, you know, Japanese people, Chinese people. And so the thing is, like, in this movie, each and every single one of these characters has, like, sort of like a really scary, creepy fetish of black people. And so, yeah, like, that is not really the point. Like, he's just a photographer. It's one point of his personality, his character. But, like, this is, like, I mean, it's no different than, like, saying that John Carpenter's Halloween is, like, a masterpiece, one of the greatest horror films of all time. I mean, let's face it, that screenplay is pretty paper thin, too. And the characters in that screenplay aren't half as interesting as some of the characters in this movie.
I don't, there's no just broader context to the fact that it is his eye. They just pick something random, essentially. Like, they pick something to show that he was, like, sensitive or artistic. And, like, that, like, a very, very cliched, thing to put into your character to make them, you know, likable or relatable.
And yet none of his actions. Especially of photography. None of his actions demonstrate any of these random bits. This is, like, the worst writing of a character I've ever seen. The whole photographer thing, it could have been anything. They could have picked literally anything.
Absolutely.
It had nothing to do with his personality. His actions don't demonstrate that he's a nice guy. When does he ever show that he's a nice guy? I don't know. He could be a complete asshole.
It doesn't even
have... because he never does anything. He never does anything. He never shows any compassion towards anybody.
On that side of it, you know, I actually agree with... I think, Simon, you said this, about, it being, like, a reactive performance, that he's a fish out of water. Was it Ricky?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, you know, I agree with that aspect of it. And then, but I feel like, you know, maybe there should be something played up and, like, you know, like, I mean, I guess it is very rare for him to see, you know, another black person in the film. It's actually not that rare. But, like, you know, we got that one scene where he sees the one guy at the party. And I would have liked to maybe have some sort of sense that he's, like, being reduced to his race by existing in, you know, relation only to white people. And I know that is the broader thing of it, but in a character sense, it's difficult to get that. And, like, I feel like maybe that could have been played up a little more. I don't know.
You guys have a problem with the fact that they just happen to mention that this character is a photographer, which is no different than, say, her dad being a neurosurgeon or her mom being a psychiatrist.
Oh,
or
no, those are
his
those
girlfriend
are like,
being a
that's
barista.
Actually an important. Those are
no,
kind of
can
important.
Can I please?
Things.
Can I please? Can I please make a point without time. Getting interrupted? Thank
okay.
you very much.
Okay.
So I'm not entirely sure why that's such a, like, deal breaker for you guys. I mean, in the story of black characters in horror has been one of whitewashing and gross misrepresentation for almost 100 years, if not more. I mean, it's refreshing to finally see a black actor cast in the main role of a horror film where, I'm sorry, he is smart and tough and intelligent and strong and likable. And the fact that he's a photographer, that's just a throwaway sort of, like, personality trait about him. I don't think he really put much thought into it. But if you really want to dissect the movie, we can say that because he's a photographer, because he has an eye, and because he's aware of his surroundings, he's always taking photographs, he's aware that he's in this sort of horror movie. But the thing is, it's so strange for him and for anyone that would be put in that kind of situation that you just refuse to believe that it's even true, even though deep down inside you know it's true, and even though because you are a photographer and you have this eye and you're constantly taking pictures and looking at your surroundings, you become more and more aware of it. So him being a photographer explains why he clues in and all of the weirdness, random weirdness that happens around them. I mean, like, there's a whole entire scene here where his buddy goes to the authorities and tries to explain to them that he thinks that his best friend was abducted and being used as a sex slave. And all three of these cops are of color. They are African Americans, and they laugh in his face because who in the world would think that this story can actually be true? And there's weirder stories that have happened in real life.
So how long has this been going on? This this thing. How long?
4 months.
4 months?
Mm. 5 months, actually.
She's right. I'm wrong.
Attaboy. Better get used to saying that.
Please, I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. She's right. I'm wrong. See?
Does he have an off button? No. This is exhausting.
I know, and I want to give you a tour.
Can we, unpack first?
You want to unpack? Before the tour? So how long has this been going on, this thing? How long?
4 months.
4 months?
Mm. 5 months, actually.
She's right. I'm wrong.
Attaboy. Better get used to saying that.
Please, I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. She's right. I'm wrong. See?
Does he have an off button? No. This is exhausting.
I know, and I want to give you a tour.
Can we unpack first?
You want to unpack? Before the tour?
I do think that, you know, like, we can give Ricky some deference and that, you know, he's extremely passionate about this film. Like, I would understand that. And then, you know, like, I'm not as passionate about the film. Patrick, I don't know if you just loathe it. I don't think you do.
I'm starting to loathe it more. Well, let's just put it this way. I don't
know. Well, it's just that, yeah, really.
I very strongly disagree with what Rick is saying, his analysis of it. That's all. I mean, for one thing, like, I don't think we need to analyze this in the context of black characters in horror movie history. You can, and it is refreshing to see that. The premise, to me, is very refreshing. The filmmaking is not. I mean, regardless of how refreshing this premise is, they blew it, in my mind. They blew it with this character. That photography, I mean, you can try to infer that the photography had some sense of him being aware of his surroundings, but we're never shown that. That is just never shown. It really has nothing to do with him. The neurosurgeon stuff, the psychiatrist stuff, those are integral to the plot. Like, they have to be there. The photography thing, not one bit. Like, he could have been anything. It really doesn't matter. And frankly, his friend is far more perceptive than he is. And his friend's not even there. So
yeah, exactly.
He's a drip. He's a stick in the mud. He's a character that just mopes around, walks around, doesn't do anything, doesn't recognize anything, isn't proactive in any way, shows zero personality. He almost doesn't need to be there except for his blackness. That's his only defining trait.
I like, you know, like, the thing where he, like, you know, he knows not to ruffle feathers. I don't think that's that much of a character trait. It certainly is, you know, interesting in a character sense. I mean, but it's true that this guy is more of, he's a Marty Stew. Sorry.
In most horror films, when you have a scene in which the main character at the end of the horror film has to make a decision if he runs and or goes back and makes a stupid decision, like, for example, in this movie, having to possibly save a woman's life, even though he knows it could harm him if he does that. In this case, he goes back to save, was her name Josephine?
Yes.
Okay. Geraldine.
So, Georgina.
Georgina. And so in most horror films, be it like 80s slasher films or even like modern horror films, Scream, what have you, we're never really given any context or reason for that person to make that stupid decision. In this movie, we are given a reason because that woman reminds him of his mom who passed away. And we do get these flashbacks and this explanation of what happened to his mom and his child, which is one of his, like, you know, most heartbreaking memories. It's what torments him to this day. And it's how Catherine Keener's character, who plays the mom of his girlfriend, gets in his head and hypnotizes him at the beginning of the movie. There's so much fleshed out about this character. I'm sorry. I completely disagree with you guys. Simon, please.
All right. I'm going to make an attempt to salvage the photography aspect and to salvage the character a little bit, but I do not want to make this whole podcast about this one character. I would say that one of the, I think besides the obvious racial angle, sort of the other sort of major motif of this movie is inaction and the price of inaction. And in both in the sense that you have this set of characters, these hypnotized characters who cannot act, who are literally paralyzed and are really only able to express themselves at these very extreme moments, and literally all they can do is cry. This is a movie where a lot of people cry, which is not something you see a lot, and that's something I really picked up on. But anyway, so this notion of inaction, which you can connect to Obviously, this interaction between people in these very racially charged spaces, where he's choosing not to ruffle feathers and not to create undue conflicts. I think that does connect to his backstory, even though I completely agree that the backstory is a little bit hackneyed. I'm sure we're going to get there. I don't think that's totally hollow. I think there is something there. And Ari, the photography, I think the photography itself could have been more distinctive and maybe could have had more to say about the character. But I do think that the notion of photography as being essentially what saves the character, photography as this reality excavating instrument, which I think connects to a late scene where he is able to put all the pieces together because he finds a set of photographs of the Allison Williams character and her string of black victims.
Not to mention the cameras, also the way in which he can get these people to sort of like, I don't know what the word is, sort of like zone out and get out of their hypnosis for about like a matter of like a minute. I mean, if not for taking that snapshot via, now mind you, it was via his iPhone, but still, regardless if it was a smartphone and or his camera, the camera is like a crucial part of this plot, right, in the movie. It practically moves the plot forward.
Right. So I do think there is an argument to be made. I don't think it's entirely a shallow thing. Could they have done more with it? Absolutely. But, you know, this movie is already doing a lot of stuff.
The main thing for me is that if you invoke, you know, a visual medium, one that is the antecedent, it's the brother of cinema, then you have to, you know, weave it in some way formally. I don't think this film really has that much of a formal perspective. Jordan Peele does have, you know, very intuitive sense for, you know, storyboarding his shots. A lot of his shots, you know, it's like, oh, that, you know, means that. That signifies that. And it's like, that's pretty neat. But I don't think they come together towards anything. And, you know, just like there's all these shots in between where, you know, like it's just I don't see like a central motivating force in the photography, in the plot, or in the shooting approach.
Everything in this movie comes full circle. Like, for example, the most frightening scene in this film, at least for me and for my friends and for my family who are of color, it's the last scene. It's the final scene when the cop car shows up. Because at the beginning of the movie, you have this exchange between Chris, his girlfriend, and the cop after they call in the cop because they hit the deer. And it's kind of frightening because you can tell that the guy is asking him for his ID and his name when he has absolutely no right to do so. And that is a fact, okay? A cop has no right to ask for your name or your ID if he has no reason to do so. He did not commit a crime. And then at the end of the movie, we get the exact same scene mirrored, and the cop car shows up, and everyone in my theater gasped. We all thought the worst thing would happen. We all thought it would be that cop that would show up and possibly think that he is to blame. Well, clearly he killed these people and that he's just a monster and he's going to shoot him, much like George A. Romero did in the masterpiece Night of the Living Dead, in which the black character, who's the main character of the movie, does survive technically up until the final shot, spoilers, and he gets shot by the white police officers. Okay, so that to me was the most frightening element of the movie. The whole entire film, there's elements and pieces that come back in the second and third act, which is very rare to see in a horror film. Everything comes full circle. I think every single thing in this film is put there for a specific reason.
That's a script thing, though. That's not about the shooting approach.
Well, no, but in terms of the way he shot and edited this film, I think it's brilliant. I mean, the whole scene after in which he hits the deer, first of all, that was terrifying and sad and horrific. There were so many emotions going through me while watching that scene. And you hear the poor animal suffering in the background. And you get Chris walking up to the animal. And clearly, you know, you want to talk about building character. You can tell that he is mourning for this poor animal that he hit. And he actually cares about the poor animal, unlike his girlfriend, who seems like she doesn't give a shit about the deer. And then you have this beautiful shot, reverse shot. He zooms into Chris's face, zooms into, like, the deer's face. Beautiful, nice blur. Goes out of focus for a bit. And you know that's a bit of foreshadowing. What's going to happen to Chris's character later in the movie? You know he's going to be in a similar situation where he himself is going to be paralyzed, unable to move, and helpless. I think that's brilliant directing, brilliant editing. I think that opening sequence, like I said, harkening back to John Carpenter, the way he uses his widescreen compositions, the fact that you have this black character walking through a white suburban neighborhood, at least we assume to be a white suburban neighborhood, a wealthy neighborhood. And usually in that situation, that black character, especially in the history of American cinema, would be considered a threat. And in this case, he's not. He completely turns everything upside down. I think in terms of like the music cues, the mise-en-scene, I think this is brilliant, especially for a directorial debut.
I definitely think it's just regular debut thing. Okay, the scene with the deer. All right. I think this is, you know, like, I've seen, you know, this thing done a lot, where maybe not in this specific context, but like it's always for some reason it's a deer when you like equate when you're talking about human equations to like a, as the word they use over and over in the film, a beast. And you know, that's what the white people in this film do with the black people. And I just to have it be a deer, and also just the deer just sort of, it just sort of comes in as like a symbol that sticks like right out. And I just think it's just extremely like overly clear, you know, when it's, you know, with the back and forth, like the shots, it's like, oh, I have this connection to this deer because like we're both seen as beasts by white supremacy. And it's like, well, yeah. But like, oh my gosh, I just thought that was just like just straight up obvious.
Did you watch A Cure to Wellness?
No, I'm probably going to see it.
Simon pointed this out last night when I was talking to him. The overall plot of A Cure to Wellness, in terms of like how, not in terms of like what it's actually about, but it mirrors this movie so much to the point where in that movie, the main character has a similar accident where the car hits a deer. It ends the exact same way where the main character escapes and kills everyone and burns down the whole entire like house. Like there's so many similarities. And yet this movie, which is only what, like 90 minutes long, and A Cure to Wellness was like 3 hours long, does everything so much better in 90 minutes, like so much better that that movie to shame.
I just wanted to, it was something that my viewing partner and I noticed because we both saw both films, and I thought it was striking how many similarities there are. These are both films about, yes, it has those like plot beats that are kind of the same, but also like they're both about these sort of hidden, hidden racial agendas, hidden, like almost like sort of a strange form of eugenics being unearthed, and this sort of Aryan sensibility. And yeah, that's sort of where the similarities end, but structurally on a thematic level, there was a lot going on sort of to compare them. I think this is the better movie, although I maintain that A Cure for Wellness is quite an interesting one.
Can I just remind everyone that I love the fact that Chris uses the deer to kill his girlfriend's dad at the end of the movie because clearly he had that big speech in which he thinks deer are like a menace and he wants all of them to be dead, and therefore he did a service by killing the deer at the beginning of the movie. I like that's just like one of those like funny, weird, clever, not even, I don't know if I would use the word clever, but one of those, it's just like a way for it to call back to an opening scene where, and I'm sorry, but like in terms of like horror films, again, like I love horror films. I hate horror films that use guns. I think guns are like the most boring way for a character to survive and or kill the baddie, the main villain. In this film, I love the way the teaspoon is like the most powerful weapon, which I think is brilliant. Okay, I'm sorry. And I love the fact that he finds new ways to escape and kill the family. And in that case, he actually uses the deer, the antlers, to kill the dad, which I thought was just like, because the thing about this movie is that as creepy and unnerving as it was for me watching it, I also found myself laughing throughout the entire film. So he had this nice balance of comedy and pure horror and a touch of satire. And I'm glad it wasn't parody, because I did not watch a trailer for this movie. I did not read a review, an article. I did not give a shit about Rotten Tomatoes. I went into this movie pretty much blind, just knowing that Jordan Peele made a movie that people think it's good and it's a horror film. And I walked out thinking it's like one of the best horror films I've seen in recent memory.
Okay. The thing where he uses the deer to kill the dad, I think this is sort of indicative of one of my problems with the movie. And it's like, okay, you know, I guess like I see that and I'm like, you're like, oh, that's kind of neat. But like, I also, you know, see that. And it's like, what does this, you know, callback like mean beyond it? And you know, like it has, you know, a couple of themes in there, which is just like, you know, I guess that scene is lower, you know, coming back, and that even, you know, that scene is just, you know, blindly physical coming back and being killed, even in a clever way, or not being killed, but, killing that witch, sees it as such in even a clever way. And I'm like, you know, that's kind of neat. And it just kind of stops there. It's like, it's like the movie has themes. And I think that's, it doesn't have, you know, like a bigger idea about itself. And I also don't think it's, you know, like sharp enough on a filmmaking level to really make up for it either.
This is Nielsen and Elisa.
Hey, how you doing?
So, how handsome is he?
Are you handsome?
Okay.
Oh.
Not bad. Hey, Nielsen. So, is it true? Is it better?
Wow.
So I think I have something that we may all agree on, and I want to see if this is true, and maybe I'm totally wrong. But can we all agree that Allison Williams is brilliant? Okay, maybe not.
Usually. Okay, I love Girls. I think Marnie is potentially the greatest character on Girls because she has the least actual, you know, character in the not in, you know, the narrative sense, but in, like, you know, the constitutional sense, I guess. But here, okay, I saw somebody say that Allison Williams playing this character broadens her character and makes her the white girlfriend as opposed to a white girlfriend. I don't think that's true because I think she's written too specifically. I think she has, you know, like too specific an approach to her. I guess, are we already in spoiler territory?
Oh yeah, we're definitely in spoiler territory.
Her facade then. And I, you know, to have that played by, you know, like uber normie, Allison Williams, Marnie, is, you know, an interesting tension, but I also just think it's awkward and she doesn't pull it off. And I think it comes off more like it being awkward and her not pulling it off than, you know, like, it being, you know, like, a weird fit or something. You know, like in the meta sense, like in the actual film. And like, I know, like, she certainly comes off better, or more naturally as, you know, like this Aryan huntress, this like Ava Braun, like at the end of the film. But I also think that it's just makes her come off sort of strange, and not in like a disconcerting way, in just a almost miscast way in the first half of the film.
I'm wondering if anybody for a second thought that maybe she wasn't in on it. Maybe she was being hypnotized by her mom. Because, like, the weird thing is that Chris finds the photographs in the closet. So right away we know she's been dating previous black men, including the one character at the beginning of the movie who gets abducted. And we even see photographs of her with the maid before she was a maid. And then I thought it was interesting how Chris tries to go downstairs. He's looking for the keys to the car. He clearly wants to get the hell out because he knows what's going on. But yet he's still talking to her as if he thinks that maybe, like, this is what I liked about it. It was kind of like ambiguous. Like, I wasn't entirely sure if because he loved her so much that he was kind of like in denial and secretly hoping that she wasn't in on it and she herself was a victim and being hypnotized, and or was he just desperate? But when she finally turns around, she's like, Chris, you know I can't give you the keys. I thought that moment was chilling. And I watch Girls all the time, and I agree, she's like the best actress in that show. And I go on record, Simon, you can, you know this, every year when Girl starts, I think I go on Facebook and I say Marnie's like the worst character. And I don't mean like, I mean that in a good way. Like, she's like the worst, meaning I hate her character so much. That the actress does such an amazing job. And I think here it's like, I think the problem is that her character is so similar to the character in Girls.
I disagree with that.
Because I think maybe it's just because... Because the thing about her as an actress, I'm not talking about the way the character is written, but I'm talking about like her performance. Like, she has this specific tone, like her voice, her physical expressions, that she's not very different in my eyes compared to the character Marnie in Girls. So when I see her on screen, I just look at Marnie. Like, I see her as Marnie, not as this character that she's playing.
Yeah. I mean, I feel as if
she's written differently and also shot differently. I feel like different physical traits of hers are emphasized than in Girls, and especially in terms of the writing. I think that, like, you know, Marnie is she's so dull and so boring of just a person. She seems worthless, but that also makes her the very most interesting that we get, you know, like a show that is so much about, you know, a person like that as a character. Whereas here, like, you know, like, both her and him have, you know, like, these little quirks, and you know, Jordan Peele, like, putting, you know, like, more of his comic sensibility into this. And I don't think this is much of a horror comedy. I feel like this is about as much as a horror comedy as, like, any horror movie that has any level of comic relief. Like, this is a straight horror movie as far as I'm concerned. I mean, like, you know, it has like some weirdnesses, but it doesn't blend its tone at the, like, towards the end. I mean, like, you know, it evokes surrealism, but I don't think it, you know, really completely gets there. But, you know, like, I'm not, you know, dissing it for that. A straight horror movie, it's fantastic. But yeah, just like Allison Williams, I think is very strange in this film, and I don't know if it's in a compelling way.
I would say, to my mind, her best scene is she has this very Verhoeven-esque scene, actually, where she is on the phone with who she's now grooming to be her next victim, the TSA guy, the best friend, and she's sitting there and you mentioned that her basically Eva Braun mode, dressed all in white with her hair tightly back. And she starts behaving like the damsel in distress, but she's sitting there expressionless as she does it. It's all in her voice work, and honestly, like, that to me was a really great moment of performance.
No, I think she's great in that part of the film. I don't know if she pulls off the first half of the film.
I don't know. I think she's great. I think everyone's great in this film. I think Catherine Keener is just equally as good.
I think Catherine Keener is awesome in this. And Caleb Landry Jones. Oh yes.
Where have I seen him before?
Heaven knows what?
Didn't see that one, but anyway.
Oh, God, so good.
I think you got to give credit to the director, Jordan Peele. Again, first-time director, at least for a feature-length film, where he's getting the best performance out of the entire cast. The entire cast. I don't think there's one character in this film or one actor that delivers a poor performance. You want to talk about also something that really... tripped me out, something that really freaked me out, is when the character who's abducted at the beginning of the movie snaps out of his, like, hypnosis for about a matter of, like, a minute and just starts attacking him and starts screaming, "Get out, get out." That creeped me out. Like, I'm sorry, like, this movie totally, totally creeped me out. And, like, again, I have, like, family of color. Half my family is black. And, you know, like, I went to go see this movie with my nephew, who's now dating a white girl, which is really awkward. And, you know, so, like... when the movie finished and we had our little discussion and talk about the movie, and I went to go see it with Edgar Chaput too, who liked the movie enough, and we were talking about it, and it was just like, it was awkward, and talking about, you know, race and racism and black characters in horror films, and then walking down the street and there's no one in sight, and all of a sudden a cop car drives by. I mean, we were affected by this movie in a big, huge way. And I'm sorry, like, I mean, we've seen black characters in horror films many, many times. And it's not the first time that that we have a black character in a horror film who ends up being a heroine and or a hero. I mean, we could just turn to blaxploitation films to find plenty of examples, fantastic movies. A lot of like films out of Nigeria, for example, a lot of great horror films, too. But in terms of like Hollywood films, I mean, I believe this is a Hollywood film, right? I mean, it's Blumhouse. Universal, right?
Yeah.
It's just rare. And I think that makes the movie a bit more special. And maybe that's a little unfair, but that's just how it is. I'm sorry. And also, you know, Simon, we always talk about the voice of doom in these horror films. And usually the voice of doom is that old man who warns the hero or the heroine about the dangers that he or she will eventually, like, come across. And usually it's played for comedy. Like, one of my favorite Voice of Doom characters is from My Bloody Valentine, the original film, right? In this movie, I kind of feel like Chris's best friend, his TSA agent, it sort of acts as the Voice of Doom. Like, he knows exactly what's going to happen. He's trying to warn him. And I like that touch of comedy. Like, I really think it was needed. And in terms of, like, the last scene, like, we talked about this, how would it have been as effective or a better film if it was the other cop who showed up at the end of the movie? And I think, like, Jordan Peele could have made that choice. Like, he could have had a really tragic ending for this character, Chris. But I think the thing is that Jordan Peele didn't want the audience to walk away feeling terrible. He just wanted the audience to walk away talking about race and the problem with racism in not just North America or the world, but also just in motion picture. Okay. So I like that choice. I like having that ending. And even though it was somewhat corny, like, you know, I think the last line delivered in this movie was like, "I told you so." I kind of appreciated the fact that I was able to walk out of this movie still laughing at that very last shot.
All right.
Three things. Go for it.
All right. I know I've been talking a lot, but I'll try to be quick. All right. I do appreciate, you know, when films like antagonize the racial tensions in America rather than, you know, try to smooth over them. And that's absolutely what this film does. And I came out of it appreciating it a lot for that reason as well. And I know I'm white. I like, you know, when stuff is, willfully antagonistic. And I thought that, you know, certainly I don't think this film was really trying to appeal to white people at all. And so, you know, like whenever a film doesn't give a fuck about a portion of its audience, I'm absolutely for it. Even when it's, you know, something like that, as opposed to more of an aesthetic sensibility. I do agree that the cast is, not even just the cast, but, you know, all the performances are very, very good. That is where Jordan Peele has most of his interest as a director, I think. 'Cause like, you know, you're watching this and like, he's very attuned to a lot of strange rhythms. Like, you know, Catherine Keener's character is just so naturalistic as opposed to, Georgina or Walter, you know, who are hypnotized and just like high camp performances. And, you know, like to have all those performances interacting in this film, I thought was the most interesting part of the film. I thought that was really great. And okay. And the one negative thing, I guess, or the disagreement that I would have here is that, okay. So, you know, like you talk about, you know, like a Hollywood film having, you know, a black protagonist, and a Hollywood horror film having a black protagonist and, you know, that being, you know, different. And it's like, you know, it's true that we don't often see that. But in terms of, that, it just feels like it becomes extra text to me, unless it really internally taps into genre heritage. And I didn't get that here. I, you know, wanted this to be more about horror cinema if it was going to do, you know, to take this racial tack with it. You know, like it can obviously just be its own thing, but for me, it just becomes sort of a neutral proposition. I try to not watch it, you know, with the sense that, you know, it's special just because it's doing this. I want it to be, you know, like doing this in a way that, you know, really interrogates I don't want to just be like, you know, I'm watching Rogue One and, you know, I'm seeing a character of, you know, a race that I don't often see on screen. And, you know, like, I mean, I know I have, you know, the privilege to do that, but like, I'd like to think that I was watching a movie and that was the case with a trans character. Maybe I wouldn't, you know, elevate it that much.
To that point, I would say, and I feel like I'm going to need to prompt Patrick soon because I feel like we've buried him somewhere. To the point of the ending, I mean, I think that sequence, and I had an experience in my theater very much like the one that Ricky described, where when that cop car pulls up, like I audibly heard several "oh fucks" in my audience, and that sequence is the one that I think most brazenly confronts current issues of race and politics and power in and also does it in the context of genre, because his, you know, strict, you know, generally speaking, with the obvious historical precedent of Night of the Living Dead accepted, you know, generally speaking, the cop cars pull up and that's usually when you crane out and, you know, then you get your denouement and the movie is over. And here a cop car pulling up is this ratcheting up of danger. And it's like, oh shit, like this is really about to become real in a whole new way, which is obviously not, you know, what cops want us to think about when, you know, that's not how they want us to conceive of their jobs. And the film plays with the real life horror of what cops now represent to us. And especially in terms of these racial dynamics, I think that was a brilliant sequence for that reason. And I think that worked with those power dynamics in a way that the rest of the movie didn't, and maybe should have. But, you know, again, that would have been a different movie. But I did think that sequence was very impactful. Did you have an experience like that at your screening, Patrick?
Yeah, the audience reaction was pretty much the same. And I think there were certain moments, you know, for as much as I could, I mean, it would take a whole podcast for me to go into every single thing that I think is wrong with this movie, because I think there's a ton. I think Jordan Peele has some promise as a filmmaker, because he can put together some sequences and scenes, although he tends to just deflate them right afterwards. He has no idea how to maintain tension or or anything, really.
Yes.
But he can do things that are very striking, and he can construct a scene very well. And that last scene is one of those. The other one was the groundskeeper just running out of the darkness. I mean, what a bizarrely freaky, terrifying image. And though it never really made any sense, and it never did come back to, you know, circle around to explain why the hell this guy was running around in the dark, it was a very frightful thing. And the conversation that Chris has with him the next day is also filled with tension and framed very well, photographed very well. I loved just the static shot of the two facing off against each other. And it was kind of a low angle, if I remember right. And it just felt like something was going to explode. And then he deflates the tension right afterwards in the next
scene. That was maybe my favorite scene in the film.
Mine too. But the cop car thing was definitely, it definitely got to, you know, it hooked the audience in many ways at certain spots. I just felt that he padded it with so much tedium that for me, it sapped anything, any creative energy that he managed to make in that movie was sapped by usually the following scene.
See, I actually think that it's interesting that you say he deflates the suspense and the tension. I think that what he's actually trying to do is he's trying to keep the audience more off guard, because by throwing in those like moments where you do get a touch of humor or the suspense does die down for a bit, you're thrown off guard. You're not expecting a next big creepy scene to happen, be it a jump scare or just like this odd performance by like the maid and or I don't know if he's the gardener, but we find out later on it's the grandpa. And so I think also he kind of has to do that for the character of Chris, because again, Chris is put in this odd situation where he's trying to trust his girlfriend and her family, where he wants to go in and hope to God that it works, even though he clearly tells her at the beginning of the movie, like, you know, did you notify your parents that I'm black? You know, this might be a problem. He's going in, he's worried, and he's trying to put himself in a situation where he's trying to trust these people. And even though as soon as he gets there, it's bizarre. Like as soon as he meets the dad, like her dad, I'm sorry, is weird, like right away. And it's not this campy performance, it's heightened, but it's not camp, not full out camp. And he starts talking about the deer and how he did a service for killing to their neighborhood for killing the deer because there's too much of them running around loose. And it's just
that was
really
awkward. awkward line, though.
It was weird. Like, if I was in his shoes, I would have wanted to leave right away. And I'm sure his character did want to leave right away. So, like, it's one of those situations where I think that the director is still trying to, I guess, put some kind of believability as to why this character is still sticking around after, like, a day or two. And finally, he does want to leave. He does decide to get out and leave. And this is before he even discovers the photographs. And I like that. I appreciate that. Because people always make fun of horror films and they say, well, why doesn't a character just leave? Get out, leave. And in this movie, it's like he's given a reason to leave eventually, but even before he discovers the photographs, he comes to the conclusion, the decision that he wants to get up and leave because he just believes it's in his best interest and the best interest of his relationship.
What I do want to say though is like, as far as that, like him deflating the tension in order to keep the audience off guard, I mean, you can always make an argument for that. I'm not in Jordan Peele's head, so I'm not sure why he decided to do that. But there are several movies, you know, like take a movie like The Invitation, where, again, a well-meaning character is put into a situation where something odd is clearly going on. And the movie builds on that. It builds and builds and builds. And yes, there are certain tense moments, and then they sort of release, but then they go right back to it. But there's always a sense of progression. There is dread that's building inside of you. That never happened to me with Get Out.
Well,
I never
see, here's
felt
the
like,
thing. See, here's the thing. Why doesn't that guy get out in The Invitation? It's like he never pushes hard enough. He has like the notion constantly, and then like he never does it. I kind of hated that film. I'm sorry.
Which is fine. That's fine. But what I'm speaking, I mean, you can certainly argue the character's motivations in any movie, and I'm not. Even in Get Out, I'm not going to criticize the fact that he didn't leave immediately. Like, there's no movie otherwise. In fact, a lot of the people behave irrationally mm-hmm. in this movie. But so what? It's a movie, and there's kind of something a little bit off-kilter in the tone anyway. So I was never taking this movie for reality. I mean, not one second. Whereas The Invitation, you're right, is trying to be a little more realistic, a little more natural. But I felt that character had his own reasons as well. He probably thought he was going insane. But regardless, what I'm talking about here is the feeling of dread that movie builds up. Like, you know that it is building towards something horribly, horribly wrong. And it never lets go of that, even though it may release the tension now and again. Whereas Get Out totally deflates the tension. Like, it's gone. And now then it has to work to try to get that back, which is why I never felt scared once in this entire movie. Because
yeah.
I never felt like anything was ever building towards this monster finale. I just felt like it was just a series of tiny little puffs up and then completely deflating out.
Well, a big problem with that is it doesn't have a sustained tone. It has all these different tones with all these different performance styles, and they just don't ever mesh. They don't ever, you know, really interact in, you know, a way that, you know, sort of becomes, you know, singular. You know, it's interesting, you know, that we've got all these different tones at work in the film, but they also, they hurt each other. Like you said, they deflate each other.
But that's not a fault, because that's a decision, like a clear decision, a part of the filmmaker. Now, if it doesn't work for you and you think it's a problem, then that's, of course, like your viewpoint. Some people are going to like a movie, some people won't, but I don't think it's a fault. I think, like, comparing it to The Invitation, which I actually like, I think it's a good movie. I mean, that's a completely different type of film. That film is not trying to throw in some satire or comedy, for that matter. It's a straight up
serious
film.
There's satire in there.
A bit, but I mean, it's a completely different film.
LA kind of vibe, that sort of new age, you know, LA. There's definitely some satire in The Invitation. There's a little bit in there.
But I think tonally, like, both filmmakers are going for a completely different film. I mean, Jordan Peele clearly wants to add in a touch of comedy. I mean, if not, he would have never have included a character like Chris's best friend. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anything, like, if you want to call out an actual perhaps flaw in the movie, I mean, his character, I mean, serves really no purpose to the film. I mean, sure, he warns Chris about the dangers, and sure, I guess he does show up at the very end of the film, but he doesn't even save Chris at the very end of the film. He just arrives after Chris is already, like, taking care of the whole situation himself. You could write out that character from the movie and still have the exact same movie. But I can't like, fault Jordan Peele for making the kind of movie that he wants to make. Is it going to appeal to everyone? Clearly not. I mean, no movie is going to be for everyone, right?
No.
Okay.
And
how does it work together then? I want to know, like what does the decision to have all these tones do? Because I love, you know, messy films, but I feel like there has to be, like, you know, a broader sense to the mess, and I don't understand what it is here.
Well, I'll go first, I guess. I'll make an attempt at sorting out the messiness. One of the things that I really appreciate about this movie, I appreciate because I read a lot. I read a lot about racists on the internet, and I read a lot of like stupid racist shit on the internet because people make fun of it a lot and it's funny. And one of the things that you'll notice about racists when you like really examine what they have to say, especially to each other and you know about people of different races, is that they don't make any fucking sense. Like internally, one of them may have some internal logic, and another one may have some internal logic. But between them, if you try to sort out any kind of coherent ideology, it very rarely ever crops up. And then when it does, it's batshit insane. And something that I think this movie really capitalizes on is that these people who abduct and then steal these black lives, they don't have a coherent ideology. When they get asked, well, why black people? The Stephen Root character, I believe, is just like, I don't know. We just like, they have a scheme, they have a system, but there's no rational thought behind it. There's not even like an irrational thought behind it. There's no thought behind it whatsoever. And you know, that's why they allow themselves to not see themselves as racist, because they don't interrogate what it is that they do, which to me is very much, that feels real to me, because, you know, these real life racists, no matter if anything, they're more considered. But if you pick them apart, there's nothing real there. And I think that sort of these dueling tones and these dueling performance styles kind of can work as a reflection of that. Like these people have not thought this through, which is why, you know, it really doesn't take much to dismantle their system. And these people that they have under hypnosis, they behave very strangely. Like, it's not that hard to notice that something is wrong. And I think that having these weirdnesses and these frictions pop up all the time is a reflection of their incoherence. That's my attempt, anyway.
I don't know if that works, because why is Chris's friend then in tonal opposition?
He's not in the situation. He's also not in love with the girl. And I mean, Chris is obviously making an effort to make his girlfriend happy. Well, but, okay, look, I totally agree with what Simon's saying. I mean, the bottom line here is that in terms of like your question, like the racism here is not rooted in the brutality of, say, lynch mobs. It's disguised. Like, these people come across as like liking black people. It's like, oh yeah, I have a friend, his name is Tiger Woods, do you like to play golf? I would have voted for Obama for a third time, you know.
This is going after liberal racists as opposed to the usual trope of going after redneck conservative racists.
Oh yeah, no, and I appreciate that heartily. I love that.
So for me personally, and with my viewing audience and my friends, the reason why it worked tonally for me is because we were at the edge of our seat in those tense, nail-biting scenes in which this character, who we happen to like and want to root for to succeed and survive, is in danger. And then when he breaks that tension and adds these odd, weird, comedic, dark undertones like of like these white people saying like the most inappropriate things, like feeling off his muscles and saying, oh, he is it better to like have sex with a black man instead of a white man, that is just as creepy and frightening as, say, someone taking a drill and performing an operation on some guy's brain. And like, I'm sorry, I really wanted to get one of our friends on this podcast, and Simon, I think we really should have, who is black, who is of color, because I think it would have been to our benefit as a podcast to have a different viewpoint from someone who is a black American.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Seen this movie, and the thing is, like, I'm sorry, but like, everyone who I was with, like, I think like the bottom line is, sorry guys, but you're all white and you haven't really
so are you though.
Okay, but I'm sorry, I'm not like white. I'm a minority within a minority, living in a city where I'm like a minority times three, and I've felt discrimination plenty of times in my life. I've been beaten up and assaulted three times, two of which were in the United States of America, by the way. I felt plenty of racism and discrimination throughout my whole entire life, and so does my family and my friends who I went to go see this movie with. And when you're sitting in a movie theater and you're sitting with these people who you care for and love, and you're watching this movie, believe me, it's going to have a different impact on your viewing experience.
Look, we can't review movies like that. You just can't. First of all, you can never assume what somebody else has gone through. You can't say, I've gone through this, so I know. Because right away you're discounting.
All right, okay.
Right away you're discounting what I've gone through. Whoa, wait a second. Right away, you've discounted everything that the other person has gone through, and you can't review movies that way. we're reviewing a movie here. We're reviewing the skill and the talent behind the movie and what we think it's trying to say. But by dismissing another person's viewpoint simply because of their skin color, you are propagating the very racism that the movie is speaking out against.
I'm answering Molly's question. Molly asked me a question as to why, for me, that viewing experience and tonally, it worked. And I'm answering the question.
You were doing well until you went off on the tangent of I am this and I am that. And I know that this work for these kinds of people. And it may not, sorry, guys, but if you're white, it's not going to work for you.
All right. I want to try to sort this out a little bit. Okay. So, yes, if you are of color, you're definitely going to have a different and perhaps a better viewing experience with a movie like this. I can't feel to the extent that somebody of color would, that level of, disturbance, that level of it. But I also, when I take, aesthetic issue with the film, I like to think that's because I'm trying to, obviously I'm trying to be anti-racist with my read of this film. I'm trying to see what could have maybe been more effective from, an aesthetic standpoint. So I think, there's certainly value to both of these arguments.
But Jordan Peele has gone on record in many interviews saying that the most frightening thing about this film is those moments that you guys are talking about where it changes tonally, because there's nothing more frightening in this film than racism itself.
I mean, the most frightening thing for me is how boring some of this movie gets. Like that's the tonal shift that I'm talking about. Like I'm not criticizing going from comedy to horror. There are movies that do that well.
Yeah.
I just don't think this movie does that well, because in between the comedy and horror, the comedy that works and the horror that sometimes works is long stretches of absolute tedium where nothing works, because nothing, there's no point to almost any of it. It's just a lot of walking around
with Steadicam.
It just doesn't, that's the deflation I'm talking about, not comedy versus horror, because those things can absolutely support each other. We've seen that many times. But the tedium, the boredom, the nothing that happens in between, the long stretches, this is what ruins the movie for me.
Yeah, they can support each other, but I think that it doesn't work as well in a horror mode as its comedy mode. So I don't think it's comedy or it's sort of cringe comedy has enough to support with the horror aspect of it. I think the horror filmmaking in this is honestly very cliched. It is, it's Blumhouse house style. I don't really care if something's in a house style, but I watch this and I'm like, I see You're Next, which is a film that I hate. These films with all these, these light brown interiors, and just some rich person's house that they happen to know. I know Jordan Peele is rich too, but just like, it's just another one of these on its horror side of it.
I feel like there are gaps in viewing experiences that we just can't bridge, and we may have to accept that.
Well, that's fine, because somebody will listen to the podcast and maybe they'll agree with me and maybe they'll agree with Ricky.
I feel like we have come to a natural wrap up point. how's everyone feeling? I do believe it's time to wrap up. Personally, like I said, I think I land somewhere certainly more on the positive spectrum. I didn't feel these long gaps of disinterest that Molly and Patrick have reported. But that's neither here nor there. I'm struggling with how to wrap this up because there's just so much going on, but I do want to thank everyone for a lively and spirited discussion that I hope continues in other parts of the interwebs as this as reaction to the film continues to unspool, and I know that's already going in a few different directions as we speak. Thank you, Molly, for joining us. Ricky, is there anything else we should mention before we go?
You can listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, of course, on our website, sordidcinema.com and or goombastomp.com. And I will try my best to post some of the older episodes every single week, maybe one or two with the new episode.
Fantastic. Thank you, everyone. And thank y'all for listening. Do feel free to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe to the iTunes feed. You can find us all on Twitter. I know. Are you still at Camera Angel, Molly?
Camera underscore Angel.
Fantastic. I'm on there at Hollow Minds, but as I always warn people, I mostly just yell about socialism these days. Ricky, you run the Goomba Stomp account, yes?
Goomba Stomp Mag is a Twitter account. You can find us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Pinterest, Flipboard, you name it. Join our Facebook page. And I'm going to add the link to the actual Facebook group for the Sort of Cinema podcast on the post for this podcast.
How about you, Patrick? Where can you be reached?
Hopefully seeing a good movie next week.
All right, we'll find good
I'm theater. Sorry, I hate being the guy that like is dissing every movie. I really, really, really wanted to see a good movie.
Yeah. Well, I was glad to have you here with me.
I All hate right. being that guy. But anyway, you can find me also on at NExpress Nintendo, which is the another Twitter account for our NExpress Nintendo podcast, also on Goomba Stomp.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you all so much, and thank everyone for listening.